45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast present the Fire Chief program, starring Eddie Cantor. Texaco dealers from coast to coast are truly hosts of the highway. Thousands of car owners every day enjoy courteous and thoughtful Texaco service. There's never anything offhand or casual about the way a Texaco dealer greets you. Nothing casual either about the swift, businesslike way he services your car. You quickly realize that your car is in friendly, capable hands. Texaco dealers know cars, know how they should be serviced. That's why they give them the best service, Circle Service. Circle Service includes cleaning the windshield, rear window, stoplight and headlight lenses, noting the inflation of your tires, checking the radiator and oil. Circle Service makes your driving pleasanter, easier, safer. Texaco Circle Service costs you nothing. So next time, try a Texaco dealer. And now, here is Eddie Cantor.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, everybody. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, Eddie, where were you yesterday?
I was helping one of my relatives celebrate his birthday.
What relative?
My Uncle Sam. Every March the 15th, he receives many happy returns of the day. I gave him a little sly token, enough for two new cruises for the Navy.
Well, I bet you did pay out a chunk at that.
Believe it or not, Jimmy, I give with pleasure.
You do?
Yep, in this country, in March, most people know what their income will be. In other countries, they march in and nobody knows what the outcome will be. But, Jimmy, I'm used to paying taxes after living at that Sherry Netherland Hotel in New York.
Is it expensive there?
No, not unless you figure $11 is too much for a baked apple. That's what they call it.
$11 for one baked apple?
Yeah, but that's with cream. Oh, well. It's expensive at the Sherry Netherland, but the service, Jimmy, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. Last week I ordered a steak, but it came in a little bit burned. Well, sir, they got the head waiter and the manager and the chef, and between them all, they fixed it.
Oh, they gave you a steak that wasn't burned.
No, they brought back the same one bandaged. But I didn't eat it. I took some calf's liver. One order, Jimmy, of calf's liver, $4.90.
No.
Yes. Imagine $4.90 for one hunk of liver. Why, when I was living on the east side of New York, there wasn't a man in my neighborhood who could lift $4.90 worth of liver.
Eddie, stop your kidding. Remember, this is March 16th.
I know. Yesterday I paid the
whole... No. Tonight you promised to repeat your 25th anniversary broadcast.
Well, Jimmy, but repeating a whole program...
But your listeners are requesting it. Let me read a typical letter from one of your fans. It says, Dear Eddie, if AB's Irish Rose and Tobacco Road can run for 5 years... Your anniversary program can certainly give two performances.
All right, Jimmy. All right. We'll do that. Okay. All right. We begin when I was a boy on the east side of New York. It's Miner's Bowery Theater, Amateur Night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next amateur is Edward Cantor. He says he's an impersonator.
Ladies and gentlemen, my first impersonation will be that...
Quiet! What do you say we give a kid a chance, eh?
My first impersonation will be that of the well-known star, Harry Thompson, the mayor of the Bowery. The scene, Essex Market Court, and I play all the characters myself. The first case on the docket is Spike Hudson. Officer, what is he charged with? Your Honor, he was caught picking pockets. Pickpocket, eh? Well, we'll make short work of him. $10 fine. Your Honor, he says he only has $7 on him. We'll turn him loose in the crowd till he gets the other three. Next case, Jay Smithy, you're charged here by Officer Sullivan with breaking into a lady's dress shop and stealing a silk petticoat. Smithy, do you make it a habit of going around stealing petticoats? No, Judge, that was my first slip. Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. When you were stealing that petticoat, why didn't you think of your mother? I did, Your Honor. That's why I took size 42. Oh, he loves his mother. It's too bad. You're going to miss your mother for the next 30 days. Take him away. Next case, Mamie Jessup. Mamie, step up to the bar here. You're charged here with disorderly conduct, assault and battery, and resisting arrest. You beat up two policemen, took away another cop's club, stole one officer's badge, and finally tossed the sergeant over a horse car. Well, Mamie, speak up. What about it?
Your Honor, I couldn't help myself. I did it in a moment of weakness. I'll tell you how it happened. I went to Coney Island with my boyfriend. We sat in a beer garden and had 15 schooners of beer.
Well, after the fourth schooner, why didn't you order sarsaparilla?
After the fourth schooner, I couldn't say sarsaparilla. You should have seen me, Judge. When I got home, I picked up a hairbrush instead of a hand mirror, took one look and says to myself, for heaven's sake, do I need a shave?
Fine, $5. Court's adjourned.
Well, Eddie, I imagine you made good on that amateur night.
Jimmy, I was lucky. I took the prize of $5 and asked the Belle of Henry Street to help me spend it.
Oh, you reckless devil.
Yes. We went to the New Amsterdam Theater and saw the biggest hit in town, The Merry Widow.
I'll bet you were proud.
Proud? Oh, you should have seen me in the balcony holding Ida's two hands.
Both of them?
Yes, I had $1.70 left and she was sitting next to my money pocket. You see, I didn't know Ida well enough then.
Well, I guess you know her better now.
Yes, now she can go through my pockets anytime. I hide my money under the carpet.
Oh, The Merry Widow it was. I remember that famous waltz.
I can describe the thrill I got in hearing the leading lady sing it. She had a face like an angel and a voice like, well, like Deanna Durbin.
Of the Merry Widow Waltz, the automobile was a daring experiment. Starting one of those old-time gasoline buggies was a back-breaking job. And then came the miracle of the self-starter. But even today, you may not be getting the most out of this great advance. And you may actually be losing money unless you use a gasoline especially built for instant starting. Quick starts save time, battery, and money. And quick starts start in the carburetor, where only a small cupful of gasoline must spin your engine into action. Millions of motorists in all 48 states know from experience that Fire Chief gasoline gives them quicker starts in any weather. Fire Chief is specially refined to release full power instantly. And remember, Fire Chief, a special gasoline, sells at Texaco dealers everywhere at regular gas prices. So next time, try a Texaco dealer.
And that night, Jimmy, with the Merry Widow Waltz still ringing in our ears, I proposed to Ida.
Boy, I wish I could have heard.
If you did, you'd have had a good laugh.
Why?
We sat on the steps of her house on Henry Street. I didn't beat about the bush. I grabbed Ida's hand and said with all the fervor of Casanova, Ida, you are the only girl of all the girls of this neighborhood who are the girl that I love, if you don't mind.
Oh, Eddie, that's marvelous. What did she say?
Jimmy, she hesitated. I tried to swallow my Adam's apple, took a deep breath and said, I certainly would appreciate if you please, and I must have your answer at once because I have many offers. Well, sir, she told me to ask her father, and the next day I did.
Uh-oh. Come in.
Mr. Tobias, I came here to see you. My name is Izzy, Eddie Cantor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know you. I watch you play ball in the street, and you sing at the school and make funny faces.
Yes, Mr. Tobias. I just won first prize at Miner's Bowery. I'm in the theatrical business.
You're a bum. You're a loafer.
No. I'm an actor.
What's the difference?
Oh, look, but I like your daughter, Ida, and I think she likes me. We want to become engaged.
To an actor? That's no business. Now, if you had a little store like Jen's Furnishing, that's a clean business with collars and ties and stuff.
But, Mr. Tobias, I'm ambitious and I love the theatrical business. Someday you'll see my name in electric lights in front of a theater.
You'll never marry Ida until I see your name in front of a Gents Furnishing store. Good night. And so, Eddie, you made up your mind to marry Ida.
That's right.
And her father made up his mind that he'd never have a comedian in the family.
That's right.
And you both got your wish.
Yep. Yeah. That's right. Quiet, Jimmy, quiet. Next came Coney Island. I was a singing waiter.
What's that?
I served drinks to the customers and sang. The more I sang, the more they drank. And we had a piano player that we called Ragtime Jimmy, a quiet sort of a guy who never opened his mouth, but how he could play the piano. And his full name was Jimmy Durante. That's right, Jim.
You know, stuck away in a little cafe in Coney Island, you certainly were a long ways from Broadway then.
No, James. Broadway used to come down and see us. George M. Cohan, Irving Berlin, Diamond Jim Brady.
Diamond Jim Brady? Say, how old are you?
Jimmy, this is an anniversary program, not true confessions. And one night, Diamond Jim Brady gave me a dollar tip. A big silver dollar. I was so happy I gave it to a little baby girl who was parked in a go-kart outside of our place.
I know. She told me.
Wait a minute. Wait, let me understand this. The baby told you?
Yes, because that little baby girl grew up to be Sophie Tucker.
Get her. Well, wait, I'm not that old. Go on.
Eddie, in the good old days, the goal of every actor was Broadway. Tell me, how did you hit the big street?
Jimmy, I knocked around in vaudeville for quite a few years, and my agent sent me up to see the outstanding theatrical figure of our generation, glorifier of the American girl, the great Ziegfeld.
Were you scared?
Scared? No. I was petrified. But I knew this was my one chance. My one chance. I knew I had to be a high-pressure salesman. I took a deep breath. I knocked on the door.
Come in.
Hello, I'm Eddie Cantor.
What? What did you say your name was?
It makes no difference. Mr. Ziegfeld, it's the talent that counts. I came to put new life into your show, The Midnight Frolics.
New life? Why, in my show, I have W.C. Fields, Fanny Bryce, Burt Williams. If you ever get in, that's opposition.
Listen, when they get to know I'm a regular fellow besides my terrific talent, then they'll learn to like me and they won't mind the opposition.
They won't. Well, you certainly have enough nerve. By the way, what do you do?
Mr. Ziegfeld, do I ask what you do?
Why, I produce the Frolics. I produce the Follies.
If you hire me, you ain't started yet.
Young man, don't you think you're a little conceited?
Conceited? Say, as it happens, I'm a little bit bashful because I'm frightened. But once this fright wears off, you'll hear some stuff.
Look here, my boy. I've got plenty of big stars. They get a lot of money.
I'm not worried about money. What's money? With me, everything is art. What are you going to pay me?
Well, we'll arrange that after I watch you rehearse tomorrow. If you look good, you go on Thursday night.
Thursday night?
Yep.
Gee, thanks, Mr. Ziegfeld. I'll run along now.
Goodbye, young man.
Oh,
what is it, my lad?
I was just wondering, could you let me have a little money in advance?
Well, I don't know. You see, it's rather unusual.
Look, all I want is a nickel to get back to the Bronx. I walked all the way down.
Here, you better take $5.
$5?
Yes, a fellow with your ideas is liable to wind up taking a taxi cab.
Well, Eddie, there's no use asking you if you made good at that rehearsal. But your first opening night, tell us about that one.
Jimmy, I'll never forget it. The audience must have been in a good mood. Everyone was a hit, even I. All my friends came to see me, of course. Ida's father was late. He was stuck in the traffic.
Stuck?
Say, you try getting a pushcart through Times Square.
What show was that?
Jimmy, that was the Ziegfeld Follies of 1917. Played it right here at the Forest Theater. Mm-hmm. Then the Follies of 1918 and 1919.
Well, Ziegfeld had a Follies every year?
Yes, every year he had a Follies and Ida had a girl, yeah. Yes, sir, we both glorified the American girl. Don't encourage me.
Eddie, after all these years, I'll bet if Ida presented you with a boy, you'd be so happy you'd pass out cigars.
Pass out cigars? I'd pass out myself.
Say, what were some of the other shows you did for Mr. Ziegfeld?
Well, in 1923, he starred me in Kid Boots. Mm-hmm. The show lasted until 1926. Mm. One night at the Selwyn Theater, I received a phone call asking me to appear at a party on Long Island. It was given by Rodman Wanamaker. His guest of honor had asked for me.
His guest of honor?
Yes. The Prince of Wales, later the King of England, and now the Duke of Windsor.
Well, Eddie, that was practically a command performance.
Yes, Jimmy, and my father-in-law wanted me to open the chintz furnishing store.
You know, I'm curious. What happened at the party given for the prince?
Jimmy, accompanied by George Olson's band, I sang like I never sang before.
Oh, you sang on key.
Yeah, get away. No fooling, Jimmy. His Royal Highness was a great audience. I sang song after song, told him stories. Of course, I had to explain the points because, prince or no prince, he was still English, you know. And when I left at 5 o'clock in the morning, General Trotter, his official aide, thanked me and said that if I ever came over to England, to be sure and visit His Royal Highness. And I said, thank you, sir. I'm coming over next summer, and maybe I'll live at the palace with the prince. Oh, I'll go out for my meals. There's no use waking his mother up to make breakfast for me.
Oh, Eddie, that must have been some evening for you.
It was. I can always remember the slim figure of the Prince of Wales dancing to George Olson's music. The one song he kept requesting repeatedly was Who from Sonny.
And that was 1926, eh? What happened in 1927?
In that year, I played my last Ziegfeld Follies, and inasmuch as I had just started to learn to live, I thought it would be nice to write the story of my life, because everybody wanted it.
The story?
No, my life.
Oh.
But seriously, James, I got a great thrill when my old friend Will Rogers promised to write the introduction to the book, My Life is in Your Hands. I had sent him a copy of it, and I went to see him at the Hotel Astor in New York City. Bill, I bet you haven't read the book yet, have you?
Well, I ain't going to read it, Eddie. In fact, that's the understanding we'll have. I'm not to read your book, and that will be the pay I'm getting for writing the introduction.
Bill, tell me, why don't you want to read this book about my life?
Of course, I don't believe it, Eddie.
What? You don't believe it?
No. People are an awful lot like a cat when it comes to writing their lives. They have at least 9, and they pick out the one they think will look best.
All right, Bill, I know you. You'll read it. And look, will you watch your grammar a little when you write that stuff?
Grammar ain't important, Eddie. You know, lots of people that ain't saying ain't eating.
Mister, you've got a philosophy all of your own.
Say, would you let me read you some of the introduction I wrote?
Oh, have you got it?
Yeah, right here. Now, listen.
Go ahead.
I believe that if this fella Canty hadn't got over so big on the stage, I still would have had the same regard for him. For it was the things that happened off the stage that I always liked about him as much as his wonderful entertaining. For instance, the proceeds of this book all goes to a boys' summer camp that Eddie is interested in and works for and kind of looks after. It's for poor kids on the east side that never saw a stretch of country in their lives. So I advise you all to buy this book, or you will be helping some poor kid to get poison ivy that would never in the world have had the opportunity otherwise.
Eddie, You thought a lot of him, didn't you?
You know anybody who didn't? In times like these, couldn't a line from Bill Rogers cheer you up? What he could have done with what's going on in the world now. What fun he would have had with the stock market as it was today, huh?
The stock market, Eddie?
Yeah.
Don't tell me you're in it again. You, the Wolf of Wall Street.
The Wolf of Wall Street? Yeah. Jimmy, have you seen the flag that flies over the New York Stock Exchange?
Yes.
That was my shirt.
Will you tell us about what happened to you in 1929?
What, again?
Sure.
Well, sir, 1929, I was playing whoopee with Ziegfeld, and Wall Street started making whoopee with Cantor.
Oh, you were in the market.
In it. I was under it. Under it.
All the stocks went down, didn't they?
Jimmy, the only thing that stood up was my hair. Talk about panic. People were doing away with themselves. One night, I walked into the Biltmore Hotel and asked for a room on the 19th floor, and the clerk said, for sleeping or jumping?
Was it really that bad?
Bad? Why, two fellas jumped off a bridge together because they had a joint account.
Hey, Eddie, that's all right. That's funny, you know?
Yeah?
Yeah, that ought to be in a book.
It is. The book is called Caught Short. I wrote it right in the middle of the crash, right after I lost everything.
Oh, no, you didn't lose everything. They didn't take away your sense of humor.
They couldn't. That's the only thing I didn't have on margin.
Eddie, it must make you pretty happy to know that for 25 years you've made millions of people laugh.
If that's true, Jimmy, it's awfully nice. But I would like people to remember me also by some of the serious moments, like drive slowly. We love our children. Children should be seen and not hurt.
At that, you've been able to say a lot of things in such a way that people won't forget. See, what was that you said about policemen and firemen?
Oh, let's see. Oh, yes. The old saying is, greater love hath no man than this, that he give his life to save a friend. Firemen and policemen do even more. Sometimes they give their lives to save a stranger.
Tell me, Eddie, what makes you discuss these serious subjects?
Jimmy, that's just my way of saying thanks.
Thanks?
Yes. I must have told you lots of times about my grandmother, how she was both mother and father to me. Jimmy, she wasn't famous. Nobody ever heard of her. But to me, she'll always be the greatest woman that ever lived. I told you how she slaved, peddled from door to door, so that I would have enough to eat. She taught me that each of us must leave the world just a little better than he found it. And the things she taught me, some of them I've even used on the radio.
Like what you said about gossip?
Yes, Jimmy. She never went to college, never studied psychology, but she knew people. And she said, God gave us two eyes and two ears, but only one mouth, so we could see and hear twice before we speak once.
That's good advice, Eddie.
You bet. You know, Jimmy, my grandmother died just before I could repay her for what she had done for me. And sometimes I feel that if she's listening in and knows what I'm trying to do, then maybe I've made her a little happier, too.
All right. Eddie, you certainly deserve that testimonial dinner they're giving you tomorrow night.
That's funny.
What's funny, Eddie?
I was just thinking how I could have used that dinner 25 years ago.
Oh, Eddie, there's a gentleman coming up from the audience to see you.
To see me? Oh, yeah. It's my father-in-law. Hello, Pop. Tell me, Dad, have you been listening to the program?
Yeah, and I enjoyed myself as I always do.
That's nice. Tell me, who are you sitting with?
Oh, a friend of mine. You know, the real estate man, Mr. Jason.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Eddie, he has a grand piece of property right on Broad and Chestnut Street.
But, Dad, that's no place for a home.
No, but what a wonderful location for a gent's furnishing store.
After all these years... Wait a minute. I think I recognize that suit you're wearing. Isn't that one of my new...
Oh, complaining, huh? Oh, Eddie, you never used to kick about a couple of suits. Oh, Eddie, how you've changed.
Oh, it's all right, Pop. I'm working steady now. It's
sure, all right. Well, I'm going, Eddie, and I know I can always depend on you to bring home the bacon.
The bacon? Oh, Pop, how you've changed.
Eddie, may I suggest a grand finish for this program?
Like what?
A cavalcade of some of the songs you introduced and popularized in the past quarter of a century.
Okay, but I'd like to ask the audience here in the studio, please not to applaud the titles of the songs. It will give the listeners in the homes a better chance to hear them, if you please.
Watch them shuffling along. Hear that music and song. It's simply great, mate. waiting on the levee, waiting for the Robert E. Lee. Everything is peaches down in Georgia. What a wonderful time, in a wonderful time, my little Margie. I'm always thinking of you, Margie. I'll tell the world she's got a dog and cat, a great big picture hat. That's the kind of a baby for me. She's not so good in the crowd, but when you get her alone, you'd be surprised. Oh, gee, oh, golly, oh, golly, I'm in love. Oh, gee, oh, gosh, it's you I'm thinking of. I love the ladies, I love the ladies. I love to be amongst the girls. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, oh, what a girl. Ain't she sweet? See her coming down the street. Now I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet? Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. Potatoes are cheaper, tomatoes are cheaper. Now's the time of falling in love. How you gonna keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, I don't mean baby. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. You better watch out. You better not cry, better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. She may be weary. Women do get weary wearing that same shabby dress. And when she's weary, cry a little tenderness. Did you ever see a dream walking? Well, I did. They took the moonlight from out of the skies and put the moonlight right into your eyes. Like an angel, you're a heavenly thing. Dinah, if she wanted to China, then I'd hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee. Boo-hoo, you've got me crying for you. And as I sit here and sigh, says I can't believe it's true. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. Oh, when I'm the president, when I'm the president, the parents will eat the spinach. When I'm the president,
we want Santa, we want Santa.
And when I play my final show, I want you folks out there to know my greatest treasure has been the pleasure of making whoopee.
James Wallington speaking from the studios of WCAU, Philadelphia. Good night. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.